live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, broadcasting from out of the city today and for the next 2 weeks, and then I'll be returning to the city to launch our new syndicated television and radio programs. We'll be simulcasting all across the country. More on that as we get closer to that. Lots to share today, lots of commentaries. One day a week, I choose to only deal with health and nutrition and medicine, nothing else. No guests, no commentary, no issues. Another day, I choose not to have a guest so we can do more commentaries. And today, I'll be dealing with a lot of commentaries, including from Michael McGray from the Acorn 8. Whistleblowers are uniting to fight Obama's war on women. Didn't know about it? Well, they're rallying. And these are from union members who are challenging the violence against women at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Didn't know that there was violence against women at the Department of Agriculture? Oh, yeah. Lots of it. And the government's done everything it can to hide it, deny it. Also, recently I was watching Sean Hannity interviewed the person who was the head of all rendition or torturing, and he has a new book, and it'll be a popular selling book. And they talk about the remarkableness of America. And then there was Bill O'Reilly talking about why he's concerned that America could be losing the number one position for being the most powerful and important leader in the world. Well, today, this is an education from Robert Fisk from The Independent about the picture you choose not to show. Now, in my film, Golf for Veterans, Friendly Fire, I spent 5 minutes when we had smuggled out thousands of pictures out of Iraq from doctors. The doctor said, please show this to the American public, and I put them in the film. It was at the end of the film, and these were all the children in one hospital in Fallujah who were born with terrible birth defects and rare cancers because of depleted uranium and the uranium and other pollution in the water. So today, for those who only look at one half of an issue and never the consequences to the people, we're going to have a short commentary, The Children of Fallujah, the hospital of horror from Robert Fisk. And this aligns with what I showed the public 5 years ago. Also, as many of you know, I'm challenging the legitimacy of psychiatry as a science. Now, in the hands of gifted individuals or holistic psychiatrists, of which there are many, who do not use a pharmaceutical approach, then certainly there's been a great deal of help for people better understanding what they're feeling and helping them through it, especially with orthomolecular psychiatry. But that probably represents under 3%. That means about 97% of psychiatry. It's a quick diagnosis and it's prescription or treatment. How do they get away with this? Well, they get away with it because they can legitimize virtually all their diagnosis and treatments through the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. Now, the Washington Post, Paula Kaplan, has written a short article. Quote, psychiatry's Bible, the DSM, is doing more harm than good. You should hear this because it's rare, really rare, that a mainstream official publication goes after mainstream and official medicine. And it did here. So kudos to them. And by the way, kudos to Leslie Stahl last night for having on two whistleblowers, including the current most decorated person in the Air Force, for exposing the danger to the pilots of the most expensive aircraft flying. Every effort to get the Air Force to acknowledge the danger and discontinue it until it's resolved, and they have hidden until today. Watch what happens today once they've been exposed. Watch them A, punish these two people, and B, even though they're whistleblowers officially, and B, deny the problem. But it's a major problem. And I commend 60 Minutes. I commend them for doing an outstanding piece of journalism at its best. So good for them. Hope you all have a chance to look at it. Also today, some really good news that I want to share with you on several fronts, and I'll get to that in a moment. And I want to thank all the good people, citizens, activists, Stop Pharma Cold, sent by Eileen Daneman, and also what's happening in Japan. But first, let me tell you some of the remarkable guests and topics we're going to be covering this week, so we give you a preview of the week. This evening, a special conversation with political, religious, and occult historian and philosopher Peter Levenda. He is one of the most interesting people, so interesting, I'm having no one else on. And he's going to talk about rat lines, R-A-T-L-I-N-E-S. Have you ever heard of a rat line? Well, it's a secret network that provides and has historically the worst Nazi and Ustashi criminals sanctuary in other parts of the world, and many who rose to prominence in American industry, military, and intelligence. We're going to look at the darker side of the U.S. Intelligence operations, Operation Paperclip, Blueberg, MKUltra, and others in their relationship in shaping some of America's most insidious events that continue to reverberate today. Tomorrow, renowned cardiologist, medical, and spiritual visionary, Dr. Junger, will be with us to look at the global toxicity and how science has proven you can detoxify the body. Good. Then we're going to learn about detoxification from his perspective tomorrow. Then we're going to be talking with a spokesperson from the Washington, D.C. watchdog organization, Citizens for Responsible Ethics. And we're going to look at what I believe is something that both official parties have refused to acknowledge, that no one is auditing the IRS, the FDA, the SEC. They are trying to rip away the Freedom of Information Act and shred it, and other agencies. What do they do? Whose interests do they serve? I believe that we should have agencies that serve our interest. But it's gone way beyond that a long time ago. We'll examine. And then to bring you more people who are running on platforms completely opposite that of the corporate Republican and corporate Democrats, we're going to have Judge James Gray, former Superior Court judge of Orange County in Southern California. He is the Vice Presidential Libertarian Party candidate, along with the presidential candidate from New Mexico, former Governor Gary Johnson. And I will be asking him the same thing I did to Rocky Anderson and to all the other candidates for the Green Party. I'll ask him 30 things. Are they for or against it? And I'll just ask him yes or no. So for those who believe that we have no other options, we do. And let's see what they say without any spin. Will they bar the Federal Reserve from ever printing money again and turn that over to the Treasury, for example, at no interest? That could save us $500 billion. Will they allow consumers and small farmers a chance to plant without being put out of business by the Food Safety Bill 510 of the FDA, which was sponsored by Monsanto? So I'm going to hit him with some really hard, challenging issues, and he'll have either chance to say yes or no. So just to show you that we have many options, I don't tell people ever who to vote for, but I want them to know you are not limited to two people. So we have a lot going on. Now to the good news. That's our coming attractions. This is from, we're finding out because the moment that article was written in The Nation magazine, we commend them for doing a good job on that investigation into ALEC. And ALEC, if you don't know what it is, it's the American Legislative Exchange Council. And what it is, it's a powerful group of corporate leaders who've joined together and then create laws, actually write laws that benefit their members. Then they meet secretly with state legislators who then agree to take those laws that corporate leaders have written and lobbyists and bring them in and introduce them to the state as if they're their own and as if this is what the people of that state need. That's why you have dietitian's bills. That's why you have mandatory vaccine bills and so many other things. But we didn't know that before. Now we do. Well, leave it to a citizen activist in Vermont to join together, and they killed one of those bills. Quote, advocates for vaccine choice rights delivered a humiliating defeat to the vaccine industry in Vermont this week with the defeat of Senate Bill 199, a bill that would have eliminated the right of Vermont parents to refuse mandatory vaccines to attend school for philosophical or religious reasons. A coalition of citizens and health rights organizations stopped the very well-funded effort by the vaccine industry in the first full-scale attempt to repeal a state's philosophical exemption law. And this victory is bound to resonate in the state houses where similar efforts are underway. By the way, now here's what's good, because once you know that Alec is behind it, then follow the money trail. Who sponsored the bills? That's who you should vote out of office, because they're not there for the people. In this case, State Senator Bill Mullen, the Vermont chairman of the American Legislative Exchange Council, chairman for Vermont, and ALEC is a lobbying organization that attempts to pass legislation in the states to reflect the interests of the large corporations that fund it. Now, who are these corporations? Lots of drug companies and vaccine companies. In the Vermont House of Representatives, the bill was introduced by George Till, medical doctor and OGBYN, and Dr. Harry Chin. Now, go a little further. A little scholarship gets you there. The commissioner of the Vermont Department of Health Services pushed hard for the bill, claiming that vaccine rates and for young children were declining. And Chin continued to make this claim throughout the debate. Here's the truth. Contact the Center for Disease Control, and they state that vaccine rates for the DPT and MMR and polio vaccines are at the highest level ever recorded in Vermont, and have gone up in children age 3 every year for the past 3 years. So Chin's arguments feature the old logic. If people exercise their rights, then a free speech, then take those rights away from them. The bill was quickly passed by the Vermont Senate and then went to the House. By the time it got to the House, parents throughout Vermont organized and fought back hard. And this, the first the bill failed to pass the House Health Committee. Now, why is this so important? Because we published 19 original, in-depth investigative reporting articles, all completely documented. Richard Gale, myself, excuse me, and Dr. Nancy, showing that they do not have the science of safety and efficacy behind any of these vaccines, including Gardasil, the flu vaccine, hepatitis, polio, or the influenza. And we had massive amounts of downloading that, massive, from Vermont. So the people were using the articles we wrote to prepare themselves so they could be educated when they went in there to challenge the Dr. Chins and others who are working on behalf of ALEC instead of the citizens of their community. So now everywhere in America, citizens are looking at laws that were passed that protect and benefit the corporations, and behind the scenes, the legislators that help sponsor those, and they're preparing now to fight back and repeal those laws. And in the state of California, we now have managed a lot of people working together, a lot of different groups in cooperation, and we have put hundreds of articles and documentaries and everything else on our site that the people in California use in our sister station, KPFK. Thousands upon thousands have signed the petition, and we ask for every person that you know, get them to sign the petition so that the food they buy will have to be labeled if it's genetically engineered. That's going to be on the ballot in November, first state to do so. And what happens in November can then be used in every state in America to say we only want food that if it's genetically engineered is labeled, even in a restaurant. So if you're eating something, then you have freedom of choice. Now, it's your choice if you want to eat genetically engineered food, but if you don't, you don't have to. So that's good news. So I commend all the citizens and all the activists, and these are all lay activists. These are people working from the ground up who did this up there. So good for you, because once you do it one place, that can be used elsewhere. Now, over the weekend, this is tremendously important, the last nuclear reactor, of which there are 50 in Japan, to be shut down. This is from the New York Times, from Martin Falker, quote, Tokyo, Japan's last operating reactor was taken offline Saturday. A public distrust created by last year's nuclear disaster forced the nation to at least temporarily do without atomic power for the first time in 42 years. Now, keep in mind, America has 104 nuclear reactors. They have nearly half of what we have on that small island. And they're doing without all 50 of theirs. So that means we could, too. And we know we could. Now, here's why I commend those of you in this audience. You deserve a lot of support for this. Why? Because this past year, we galvanized as many groups as possible, dozens, and countless people to educate themselves about what's wrong with nuclear power. Because if you talk with your average health journalist, they're going to say, well, there's nothing wrong with it. You know, it's safe, it's effective, it's clean, it's none of the above. We produced a multi-award-winning documentary called Knocking on the Devil's Door, and we had a premiere in New York at the Ethical Culture Center. It was packed, as many of you know, because you were standing. But what was important is we brought in the Ralph Nader of Japan, a woman, and the children of Fukushima, and they told the story of what it's like to go up against their government and how impossibly difficult it is, because the government has a long history of being an extremely misogynist, repressing women when it comes to really challenging corporate authority or government authority. And we had wonderful speakers, Vandana Shiva from India, Greg Palast, Carl Grossman, Lenny Wasserman. We had a whole panel, plus they sold the film. And afterwards, when I was speaking with the woman from Japan, she said, can I make copies of this film? And I said, make all you want. Well, we made thousands and thousands of copies. I think it was around 12,000 copies, and gave to people. From what I understand, countless copies were made and given to everyone who wanted to know about the truth about radiation, because, again, the people in Japan have been only given one picture. It's safe, it's effective, it's clean, it's green, it's inexpensive. Then we gave them Mishukaku and Helen Collicott and all the top authorities showing just the opposite, and the truth and documents and internal documents. And then people started to realize they'd been had. So a massive movement coordinated by dozens of environmental groups in Japan, and this woman helped spearhead it all. She is like the Rachel Carson at this moment in this effort. What Rachel Carson did to bring us awareness of DDT and the environment, this woman is doing in Japan. We were there to help facilitate this with hundreds of articles, the documentary, and all the people going on board. So everyone worked together, and now we closed it down. So that's the beginning, and I can promise you that won't be opening anytime soon, because the more educated the public is on any issue, the less likely they are to be manipulated by the mainstream media that acts as a spokesperson for them. Now, time permitting today, I will read The Worst Yet to Come, Why Nuclear Experts Are Calling Fukushima a Ticking Time Bomb, by Brad Jacobson from Alternet. This is just this morning. I have this. Very important that you hear this, and I'll try to set enough time aside for you to get to this. But I want to go, we have, according to our analytics, we have upwards of 7,000 new listeners listening to this program each day. That's a lot of new listeners, and they don't all come in well aware. They come because someone said you got to listen to this program for whatever reason. So just briefly, I'm going to give you a little background. First, a lot of people don't have access to a land-based station or to an internet, especially a lot of older people. So we have a service you can listen over the telephone, and over 1 million minutes were used recently just on that. That number you can call and hear this program is 832-280-0066, 832-280-0066. And if you can't get the number, call my office at 646-926-5422, and they'll give it to you. And we archive everything, so you can go to the archives of this station and download any show you want, and it's free. But why? Why should you listen? Well, we try to break the program into five parts. and we're adding a part starting next week. First, the latest on health and healing. Then, as of this week, our guests are going to come at 15 into the show. If they're a newsmaker, 5 minutes. If they're regular guests, 15 minutes. If they're a conversation with the remarkable mind, 30 minutes. Then environmental information. Then issues or commentaries, both of which are open for the public response. And then email from the audience. So that's our new clock, and we'll get more information in. But starting next week, one day a week, 45 minutes will be set aside after health and nutrition just for progressive documentaries. We'll have a documentary, like the one on dirt, which is really good, or one that impacts everyone, and have the person on, and we'll play the audio clip for about 10 minutes and then discuss that, and then you have a chance to interrelate with that host. So that's the newest thing that we're adding, and there are only about 1 in 1,000 documentaries ever make it into a theater. So all these great documentaries nobody sees, we're going to give them a place to be. So now let's go in and say hello to Richard Gale, our executive producer, because for all the people listening, and guess who the profile is of the people, because this comes from the analytics. A woman, college graduate, average age, 35 to 44. So that's who all these new people are. Compare that to most stations' audiences, which are old. And these are people who are policymakers, opinion leaders, or who are at least willing to change and make positive change, and we commend them for being on board. But there are certain programs that we really try to offer our assistance to, either lead or be helping people who are out there leading. And Richard Gale is going to tell us which topics we've taken on to actually get political action, to get the public out of harm's way, to educate them with documentaries and articles, investigative reports, testimony before Congress. We do all that. Richard Gale, could you quickly give a list of some of the issues that we are working with now and will continue to work with?
Yes. Good afternoon, Gary. Thank you. As Gary was just mentioning, one of our missions is really not just to bring the guests on, but to be able to connect the dots. And the dots are to be able to supply the new different news and opinions that appear weekly, investigative research and articles, other documentary films, our own documentary films that we are constantly cranking out, and also the calls to action. And if we go back just through the history in the past couple of years, our success, well, as Gary was mentioning, with the anti-nuclear activity, large amount of information we have provided. So one of the things is to encourage listeners, it's not just listening to guests and to the programs and Gary's commentaries, but also to be able to educate yourself, and that is the kind of platform that we are trying to provide here, so to, people can better educate themselves with articles, research that are coming out of our offices. The veterans issues we've been dealing with, the most recent documentary on veteran homelessness, and then, as Gary mentioned before, the Gulf War syndrome, depleted uranium. We have been taking on the hydrofracking industry. We helped spearhead with nuclear groups, but we had brought together the anti-nuclear group coalitions with the anti-fracking, because the two should be working together. That spurred out of our programming. And Gary was participating in the big event at the governor's home in New York City against that. The anti-vaccine movement has been extremely important for us. There were the two documentaries that came that Gary directed.
And the third I'm working on as we speak.
The third one. Of course, many of the listeners may remember that the protests that were initiated out of our offices helped to get rid of the New York City mandate when they were trying to mandate the swine flu vaccine to all the healthcare workers. We're constantly trying to bring exposure to the dangers of genetically modified food and organisms, and we are working on another film that's going to be addressing that. We support the farm initiatives of small farmers, organic foods, and how they're endangered. The Gary's for a long time has been involved with the opposition to the psychiatric industrial complex, and this is which is basically the drugging of our population into a nation of zombies, the drugging of our children, electroshock therapy, and just as and we're as Gary was just mentioning before, this recent article coming on about the DSM. Health freedom issues are extremely important to us. Those are just some of the issues that we're constantly trying to bring attention on our programs. I think one thing that is important for our listeners to remember that we are trying to progressivize these issues. That means keeping them out of any, not aligning ourselves with any specific political platform. The progressivization of an issue or a crisis or a threat is to bring it down to the real human concerns and how they affect, you know, individuals and greater collectives of people. So that's what our mission is here.
Good, and that's what we do, and that's what we do every day, and we'll continue to do. Thank you very much,
Okay, thanks,
Gail.
Larry.
Now, we're going to take a break in a moment, come back with the latest on how coca and soy can help your heart, especially if you're a woman, and fish oil can benefit kidney patients, and vitamin E guards against many cancers, all from the peer-reviewed literature, and heart disease begins in the gut from Dr. Roth, a more in-depth look at what happens when you consume something, especially gluten, which is a wheat product, and dairy. What happens when it actually goes in your gut that causes all the problems that we see? And that's one of the reasons that we put people on a wheat-free, a dairy-free diet. And we're going to then take your calls. I'm going to go back to the Robert Fisk commentary. I'm also going to hit the commentary of Paula Kaplan, and then we'll take our break and then come back. First, this is from Paula Kaplan, The Washington Post. Psychiatry's Bible, the DSM, is doing more harm than good. I'll quote verbatim, short. About a year ago, a young mother called me, extremely distressed. She had become seriously sleep-deprived while working full-time and caring for her dying grandmother every night. When a crisis at her son's daycare center forced her to scramble to find a new child care arrangement, her heart started racing, prompted her to go to the emergency room. After a quick assessment, the intake doctor declared that she had bipolar disorder, committed her to a psychiatric ward, and started her on dangerous psychiatric medication. From my conversations with this woman, I'd say she was responding to severe exhaustion and alarm, not suffering from mental illness. Since the 1980s, when I first made public my concerns about psychiatric diagnosis, I've heard from hundreds of people who have been arbitrarily slapped with a psychiatric label and are struggling because of it. About half of all Americans get a psychiatric diagnosis in their lifetimes. Receiving any of the 374 psychiatric labels, from nicotine dependence disorder to schizophrenia, can cost anyone their health insurance, their job, custody of their children, or right to make their own medical and legal decisions. And if patients take psychiatric drugs, they risk developing physical disorders such as diabetes, heart problems, weight gain. And in light of the subjectivity of these diagnoses and the harm they can cause, we should be extremely skeptical of them. Psychiatric diagnosis is unregulated, so the doctor who met briefly with the aforementioned patient wasn't required to spend much time understanding what caused her heart to race or to seek another doctor's opinion. If he had, the patient would have realized that her bipolar diagnosis was not appropriate. Neither on her ER trip nor in later visits to therapists did anyone explain how sleep deprivation impairs the body's ability to handle pressure. In our increasingly psychiatrized world, the first course is often to classify anything but routine happiness as a mental disorder. Assume it is based on a broken brain or a chemical imbalance and prescribe drugs or hospitalization. Even electroshock is still performed. According to the Psychiatrist's Bible, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Psychiatry, Mental Disorders, which defines the criteria for doling out psychiatric labels, a patient can fall into bipolar category for having just one manic episode, lasting a week or less. Given what this patient was dealing with, it's not surprising that she was talking quickly, had racing thoughts, was easily distracted, and was intensely focused on certain goals, like caring for her family, thus meeting the requirement for the criteria for bipolar. When a social worker in the psychiatric ward advised the patient to go on permanent disability, concluding that her bipolar disorder would make it too hard for her to work, the patient did as the expert suggested. She also took a neuroleptic drug, Seroquel, that the doctor said would fix her mental illness. Over the next 10 months, the woman lost her friends, who attributed her normal mood changes to her alleged disorder. Her self-confidence plummeted. Her marriage fell apart. She moved halfway across the country to find a place where, on her dwindling savings, she and her son could afford to live. But she was isolated and unhappy, and because of the drug she took for only 6 weeks, she now, more than 3 years later, has an eye condition that could destroy her vision. This patient is well-educated, and before her illness, she was wealthy. Research reflects that she was more likely to be diagnosed as mentally ill than a man in her circumstances. Racism, classism, ageism, homophobia can also affect who received a psychiatric diagnosis. It'd be less troubling if such diagnosis helped patients, but getting a label often hinders recovery. It can lead to a therapist to focus on narrow checklists of symptoms with little consideration of what is causing the patient's suffering. The marketing of the DSM has been so effective that few people, even therapists, realize that psychiatrists rarely agree about how to label the same patient. And so that's her whole point. And I think it's very important. Just remember, 25% of all adult women in the United States are taking an antipsychiatric medication, including college-educated ones, including PhDs. So their propaganda is working. And yet they have no science, none, not a single article anywhere in literature has ever shown that they can objectively determine you have a brain chemical imbalance leading to any of these disorders. Our second commentary is from Robert Fisk. I'll quote him. The pictures flash up on a screen on an upper floor of the Fallujah General Hospital, and all at once, the administrator becomes a little chamber of horrors. A baby with a hugely deformed mouth, a child with a defect of the spinal cord, material from the spine outside the body, a baby with a terrible, vast cyclops eye in the middle of the head, another baby with only half a head, stillborn like the rest, date of birth in 2009. Yet another picture flicks onto the screen, shows a tiny child with half a right arm, no left leg, and no genitalia. Quote, we see this all the time, says a female doctor who walks into the room and glances at the screen. She has delivered some of these stillborn children. I've never seen anything as bad as this in all my service, she says quietly. Al-Haddadi takes phone calls, greets visitors to his office, offers tea and biscuits to us while this ghastly picture show unfolds on the screen. I asked to see these photographs to ensure that the stillborn children, the deformities, were real. There are always a reader or viewer who will mutter the word propaganda under their breath, but the photographs are a damning, ghastly reward for such doubts. A baby with faded yellow skin and misshapen arms, a gray mass on the side of a baby's head. A doctor beside me speaks of the fallout, a transposition of the great blood vessels in another child. And I ask, what fallout? Well, that's what happens when you're in a town and no one cares about what you're putting into the system. So this becomes too much. These photographs are too awful. The pain and emotion of them, for the poor parents, at least, impossible to contemplate. They simply cannot be published. There's no nonsense attitude from the doctors in Fallujah. They know that we know about this tragedy. Indeed, there is nothing undiscovered about the child deformities of Fallujah. Other correspondents, including my colleague, Patrick Cockburn, have visited Fallujah to report on them. What is so shameful is that these deformities continue unmonitored. One Fallujah doctor, an obstetrician trained in Britain, she left only 5 months ago, who had purchased from her own sources for her private clinic a $100,000 scanning machine for prenatal detection of congenital abnormalities, gives her name and asks why the Ministry of Health in Baghdad will not hold a full official investigation into the deformed babies of Fallujah. Quote, I have been to see the ministry, she said. They said they would have a committee. I went to the committee, and they haven't done anything. I just can't get them to respond. Then 24 hours later, the same woman sends a message to a friend of mine, another Iraqi doctor, asking me not to use her name, fear of retaliation. If the number of stillborn children of Fallujah is a disgrace, the medical staff at the Fallujah General Hospital proved their honesty by repeatedly warning of the danger of reaching conclusions too soon. Quote, I delivered that baby, the obstetrician says, and one more picture flashed on the screen. I don't think this has anything to do with the American weapons. The parents were close relatives. Tribal marriages here involve a lot of families who are close by blood. But you have to remember, too, that if a woman having stillborn children with abnormalities at home, they will not report this to us, and the baby will be buried without any record reaching us. The photograph continue on the screen. A baby with tiny limbs, stillborn, a baby born with a cleft lip and a cleft palate, still alive, hole in the heart, a defect in his face, in need of major treatment. The numbers continue to rise, even while we are speaking. A nurse brings a message to Dr. Alani. We go at once to an incubator next to the hospital delivery room, and the incubator's a little baby, just 24 days old, too young to smile, but lies sleeping, his mother watching through the glass. She has given her permission for me to see her baby. His father's a security guard. The couple married 3 years ago. There's no family record of birth defects, but he only has four fingers on each of his little hands. Computer files contain hundreds of babies like this. She asks another doctor to call some parents. Will they talk to a journalist? They want to know what happened to their children. They deserve an answer. She is right. But neither the Iraqi authorities, nor the American authorities, nor the British authorities, who were peripherally involved in the Second Battle of Fallujah and lost four men, nor any major NGO appears willing to help. When doctors can't obtain funding for an investigation, they sometimes turn to organizations which clearly have their known political predetermination and hence will not help you. Now, why I think this is important is because these are just babies, and this is just one hospital. And when you look at the cause, it's depleted uranium, it is pollution in the water. So if we talk about how remarkable we are as a nation and why our presence in Iraq is so important, why can't we take any credit for our casualties, the destruction of their environment? But we won't. So that's why I shared it with you. We're going to take your calls at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And one more thing I'm going to get to. I'm going to come back after your calls and after we hear from Luann, excuse me, and address something that came up that we're trying to verify. Now, we have verified only that it's still coming from the same source. It may be accurate or not, but a lot of people are concerned. The alleged U.S. Army document, the re-education camps and psych-op missions aimed at activists. Quote, this is MarT TV. An American military document just uncovered appears to detail U.S. Army plans to call for detaining, quote, political activists at re-education camps staffed with military-hired psych officers in both American and abroad. And it goes on to talk about this. We're paying attention to it. We're investigating it to see if it's accurate or not. When we know, we will let you know. But right now, I cannot independently confirm that. Just want you to know that I'm working on it. Finally, the second issue today that I have to address is a painful one. And that deals with not my guest, but rather something that occurred on Friday on this program. And my hope is it will not occur again, or that my statement now will not be interrupted. But it may be. And I ask a basic question. What is the single most important role that this really great radio station with so many important people can offer the public? And I believe that the most important thing it can offer is freedom of speech. I hope that you get a chance to hear my response. Why? Because that's something I would like BAI's program director to explain to me and you now. in a civil and polite way, which is why I'm inviting Tony Bates, our program director, to come in, please, into the studio and explain to us why this station, in fact, the only reason that this station has ever existed, and by that I mean free speech, both my free speech and yours, which BAI program director deliberately trampled on Friday. I refer specifically to what happened on Friday when BAI's program director suddenly and deliberately censored me. That is the second time in my entire career that I've been censored, both times by the program directors of BAI. Never once in 34 years on commercial television or any other non-commercial station, I was cut off in mid-sentence because he did not approve of the information that I was sharing with the audience. I was actually defending the foundation and the station, and I believe that the question that Luann Panesi had raised from a person in the audience was legitimate. And he came running into the control room and said, cut him off and go to music. And he did. And I was not warned about this. There's been no letter, no conversation, which at the very least I believe was warranted. So be warned in case my voice once again disappears in mid-sentence, which I hope it does not, then you'll have a chance to hear in a moment, hopefully, from Tony explaining this. As a result of my being censored on a supposedly censor-free station, many of you, and I mean a lot of you, in this audience emailed over the weekend, and in surprise and in disappointment and anger, you wanted to know what had happened, which is why I've invited the program director to come on my show now and explain to all of us, and more importantly, to explain to you why the most basic principle, BAI, which is, after all, the free speech radio station, and censored my free speech on the air. I hope he will accept my invitation to join us. I also understand that Kathy Davis was angry at Luann for reading the letter. But let me take this opportunity, and then I will not approach this again, that I'm on this station, and I came back to this station because two individuals, one, both members of the local station board, said the station was in deep need of help or it may not survive the future, and I came back to help the station that I consider an important voice. But I also understand that this station has different voices. A station should empower people. The people on it should empower people. By explaining that when challenges occur, if we're honest and able to face those challenges, and if mistakes are made, open and honest to face those mistakes, then we're stronger for it. If you listen on the archives to everything I did say, you'll see that no one was attacked. To the contrary, I defended the foundation by name, including, ironic, isn't it, Kathy Davis. Whoa. And I defended everyone. But the reality is, and this is the harsh reality that someone should simply accept, that if the station did not get the premiums in a timely manner to people who needed them and expected them and were promised them, then an apology to those people, making amends to those people, could do a great deal to heal that. Also, I have asked for and received on the road the Pacific Policy Statement on criticizing the foundation and or members or its management or staff on air that was signed on July 17, 2010 in person at the Pacifica National Board meeting. If Mr. Bates comes on, I will read this to show that I have, and my audience can take witness to, nothing of an individual nature, station, or foundation was breached based upon their own documents. But we need to know that I will not be censored again, because every relationship is based upon trust. And all I've done since being here in a year and a half is trust that the station, when getting healthy and with new members, and $1,700,000 given by this audience to that station, would be able to get up on its feet and become a viable voice, as it once was, and my hope is will be again. We never shirk from our responsibilities of facing any problem, And I always believe in walk in the direction of your problem. I wish that that same was shared, but clearly on this occasion, it was not. So I will continue with my program, and if Tony Bates comes in, he is certainly going to be welcome to come on the air. Now, for the latest on health and nutrition, and I go to two nutrients that most people have not used, but should. Coca flavonoids and soy isoflavones. What do they do? They improve the levels of your biomarkers for heart disease in postmenopausal and diabetic women. Now, how many women are we talking about? Probably upwards of 40 million women. So this is not a small example of a tiny little group. This is a major amount of the American population who could benefit. And how much? 27 grams. Well, that's not a lot. That's an ounce. That's a spoonful. So you don't have to have a lot of the chocolate. Now you can get the chocolate raw, and you can get it in powder form and put it in a drink or a smoothie. Quote, the pragmatic one-year trial provides evidence to suggest that the intake of flavonoid results in sustained improvements in lipid profile, insulin sensitivity, and an attenuation of estimated coronary heart disease risk. Now, that's scientific mumbo-jumbo, but what it boils down to is when you have soy isoflavones at 100 milligrams, which is a tiny amount, and you have 27 grams, which is an ounce of the coca, you're doing a lot of benefit if you're diabetic or have heart conditions. Now, for those of you who have kidney problems, quote, taking fish oil capsules may help improve outcomes of kidney patients undergoing hemodialysis by reducing cardiovascular complications. This was done at the Lawson Health Research Institute by the scientists there and was published in the American Medical Association Journal. So I would suggest 2,000 milligrams a day. Then, vitamin E. Now, I believe we should be taking a mixed vitamin E, meaning gamma and delta tocopherols. And what happens when you do? This is the latest research, and this is from Rutgers University. And it says that, quote, two forms of vitamin E, gamma and delta tocopherols, are beneficial against many cancers. So 400, 800 units a day. And then finally from a Dr. Roth, and we'll take some calls. How well our digestion works directly determines how our body and brain functions. The old adage, you are what you eat, appears to be true. Years ago, I wrote a book on the gut and digestion. I remember at the time the publisher saying, you sure anyone's going to be interested in this? I said, everyone who eats should be interested. And I took it around the country, and it did very well. But I started off talking about what happens when food goes in your body. And it was just interesting how few people really understood basic digestion, especially that little section at the top of the intestine and then the small intestines themselves. That little section, it is the duodenum, or duodenum, depending upon how you want to pronounce it, but it's spelled the same, D-U-O-D-E-N-U-M. It governs all kinds of functions, the pancreas, the liver, the gallbladder, the stomach. It directly affects how much life-supporting nutrient absorption, including the all-important calcium, gets into your body. When you inflame it with alcohol, which you will do every time you have alcohol, it'll become inflamed, and you have caffeine, that also can inflame it, then you're going to have all kinds of fluctuations in what it does. When you damage your duodenum, you're inducing an allergic and inflammatory response. Sugars, wheat, gluten products, that causes inflammation. So inflammation anywhere in your intestine can affect your mucous lining. And this is the very tissue that hosts the majority of your body's lymph and immune system cells. They affect the body's nutrient and mineral absorption and autoimmune defense capability and toxic drainage and pH balance and antiparasitic properties and defense from non-communicable and communicable disease. So that's why gluten-free, dairy-free, caffeine-free, alcohol-free, sugar-free, meat-free is so important. Then you're going to have a more positive effect upon irritable bowel, pancreatitis, gallbladder inflammation, lazy stomach, Crohn's disease, gastrointestinal conditions, elevated cholesterol. All that can be helped. But you got to go more juicing, greens, probiotics. That's what helps you. When you help the gut, you help the whole body. Let's say hello to Luann Panessi in our studio in New York City. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. First, I want to thank you for what you just said. And, you know, there's been a lot of attention of WBAI on the Occupy Wall Street movement and how vehemently opposed they are of having Americans silenced who have an opinion against the government. How is what they did on Friday any different from what the United States government is trying to do now to anyone who tries to speak out against their authority?
Okay, but let us wait. I don't want to do any more on this until Tony Bates has an opportunity to come in and explain himself. And I'm a big believer in explaining without judging. All right?
Okay. Well, speaking of that, also, last night's show, I just got off the phone with someone before I came onto the show, thanking me for the show with you last night and how you so carefully talked about the importance of energy. And you had addressed it on one of your other shows as well. And there was an outpouring of emails commenting on last night's show. If anyone hasn't listened to it, it would be a great idea to download it, where you talked about authentic living and authentic energy versus living from a conditioned, fractured belief system. So I wanted to share that with you, and on the same line of energy, I did want to make an announcement that I did have someone who had signed up for the Sleepaway, the retreat in June. We had one cancellation. So if people are interested, do give me a call because I do want to get that slot filled in so that other people can have an opportunity. So if people want to contact me and are interested in that, I'm at 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198.
Thank you, Luann. Let's say hello to Flory from Miami. Hi, Flory. You're on.
For everything, I want to share with you, based on what you just say, my experience getting off all psychiatric medication against medical advice. They gave me tons of stuff to treat a food sugar addiction and depression. Nothing never worked. It created all kinds of other conditions like restless foot syndrome, for which I was further medicated. A year ago, I got off all of it without permission, and today I am healed from many, many, many things. I live a life in recovery. Many behaviors have been healed, and I am not crazy anymore. And this is really hard to believe. As you say in your show a couple of weeks ago in the Progressive Commentary Hour, this idea of the brain chemical imbalance is a very marvelous selling tool for the pharma companies, and I couldn't agree with that more. And thank you for all what you do.
Thank you, Flory. Max from New York City. Your turn, Max.
Hello, Gary. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for what you do. This question has to do with the gut. You were mentioning the gut, and I'd like to know what you think of coffee enemas, and two, if one uses them, do you need to take a probiotic?
Yes and yes. The whole idea is that the chemicals, including the caffeic acid in the coffee, will stimulate the liver to release toxins. And my suggestion is you should never be doing that without fully understanding it and being guided by a therapist, a licensed therapist, a holistic nurse or a holistic physician who has had experience doing it. That's number one. Number two, you should always have, even on a daily basis, about 3 billion to 5 billion good probiotics per day to colonize good bacteria, which strengthens the immune system and makes it easier for you to digest foods. Because if you continue to have a highly acidic diet and sugar, soft drinks, fructose, refined carbohydrates, meat-based products, dairy-based products create that high acidity, then that causes problems of inflammation in the gut. That causes bacterial overgrowth. That causes swelling and a loss of nutrient absorption. That's why it's so important to understand detox, and that's why we're doing a whole show on how to detox from a physician who has a different concept on detox. So detoxification and your green juices are the best way to start, spiking with garlic and onion. Okay? All the best to you. We're coming up to the end of our regular hour, but if those of you who can't listen longer, we thank you for listening. And those of you who can, you can listen over the phone at 832-280-0066 or go to the website to continue. Now let's say hello to one of our producers who, by the way, was responsible, Richard Polonesky, for the great work on the big film on American veterans that were out there now around the United States working with hundreds of veterans groups to get the 30 million American veterans the help they need. Many are suffering from post-traumatic stress. Many are homeless. Many are suffering from Gulf War syndrome, all of which is being denied and avoided by the VA, and so these people suffer. Nice to have you with us today, Richard.
Thank you very much, Gary. And this, as you said, this film is an extremely powerful tool, not only an expose in what's going on, but also a tool for positive change. And you know, we're not only the creators of numerous award-winning independent films, such as American Veterans, Scarred and Forgotten, but we're also very strong advocates and supporters of independent filmmakers and the festivals who showcase and provide an outlet for their films. And one of the most well-respected and important film festivals is the Hoboken International Film Festival. That's based out of, you guessed it, Hoboken, New Jersey. And they do an outstanding job of supporting the work of independent filmmakers, and their chairman, Kenneth Delvecchio, he does an amazing job at many levels. And we really appreciate all the great work that they do. And this year, the festival runs from June 1st through June 7th, and we have two films in competition as finalists this year, that being Knocking on the Devil's Door and our latest critically acclaimed documentary, American Veterans, Discarded and Forgotten. And in addition to the festival, and this is truly amazing because out of nearly 2,000 films from around the globe, we have been selected to compete among 10 films in the New York Post Hoboken International Film Festival feature film trailer competition with American Veterans, Discarded and Forgotten. And over 1 million votes for this competition were cast last year. And this is really a powerful opportunity. And we need your vote to help spread the message and to help our vets. If you go to GaryNull.com, and right on the homepage there, you'll see the information on how to cast your vote for Gary Null's American Veterans, Discarded and Forgotten. Please do that today. Share the link with everyone you can. It's an extremely powerful opportunity to spread the message of this critically important film, which will help our veterans get the assistance they so desperately need. So make your vote count, and thank you for your support. And for more details on the film festival itself, which we hope you can all attend, visit HobokenInternationalFilmFestival.com.
I think they're doing a terrific job. First, it is one of the most important film festivals in the world, one of the top 10 independent film festivals. And you have to understand that there's the Sundance and the big ones, like the Tribeca, but those really are controlled by the big budget films. An independent film may cost $50,000, $100,000, generally no more than $150,000, and otherwise they almost get no attention. And you have a chance to see these films and the film festivals. And a whole week, the first week of June, they're playing it over in Hoboken. And when I come back, I'm going to go over there, and then I'll be there because we have two films in competition. Knocking on the Devil's Door and American Veterans, because I just really enjoy meeting other documentarians and talking with them about their work and how long it took them and the biggest challenge they had. So it's nice. Thanks a lot for that. We'll say hello to Desiree from Brooklyn. Hi, Desiree. You're the last caller today.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Good.
I had a question, and I'm hoping that you can help me. I'm interested in purchasing precious metals like gold and silver. I think that you mentioned that there was some information on the website, but I couldn't find it. I just want to make sure that I'm prepared for when the dollar crashes.
No, I don't have any information on my website. What I said was that the only type of silver that I would suggest people who are going to purchase silver is junk silver, mainly dimes, because I believe, it's my belief, that when the dollar loses more value and China and the United States are in an economic challenge over Iran, if Iran is bombed by Israel after the next election, then the price of oil is going to go through the roof and the dollar will drop. And I believe, it's my belief, that the Chinese are doing everything possible as fast as they can to buy and build things using our T-bills as their currency. So they're not going to be sitting around with $1 trillion that they would lose. They'll get most of that in phantom cities, dams, and, you know, buildings and everything else, and buying minerals around the world. Then I believe that silver could go way up, in which case you want the smallest denomination because it would have the greatest value. So then only buy at spot, and don't buy any of the so-called rare and exotic ones, because then you're paying way more than what you should. And then just put them away and forget that you have them. Okay? All the best to you. Next up, Lynn and Vicky Saputo in Prescription for Health. You won't want to miss this program. Thank you all for listening.